Chapter 11, Step 5, Selling Houses Fast. One of the most common fears people have about getting into real estate is the fear of being able to or unable to sell the house and somehow getting stuck with it. I can understand why this fear would create anxiety for beginners because they simply don't have enough facts to overcome the fear. However, if you're not a beginner and the fear remains a problem, then you have no excuses. So let's get to fixing it right now. The truth is that selling should be the easiest part of your business. Are you not buying because you're waiting to sell what you have? Is your income suffering because you haven't plugged the hole in the back end? Are you so afraid of selling that you quit or never get started buying? In this chapter, I discuss the reasons why some people have trouble selling, how to dispose of the reasons, and a step-by-step process for selling wholesale deals, lease options, and cash-out buyers. I've identified 14 reasons here why people have trouble selling houses. Pay close attention to reason number 4, though, 4 through 7, actually, because when combined, they amount to about 80% of the reasons that houses don't get sold quickly. Most of the time, it's a people problem, not a house problem. Here's the 14 reasons why houses don't sell quickly. 1. Not ready to sell. 2. In a poor area. 3. They're overpriced. 4. The salesperson's personality problems. 5. Inflexibility of the seller. 6. Salesperson's lack of knowledge about available financing programs. 7. Salesperson's lack of knowledge about attracting and pre-screening leads. 8. No follow-up system in place. 9. Functional obsolescence of the house. 10. House is very small. 11. Salesperson losing control of the loan process. 12. The house too far from the city. 13. The house in a price range too high for most buyers in the area it's in. 14. Only one bathroom. Notice that the majority of these problems are directly related to the person in charge of making the sale, and the rest should be fixed before you buy. Now let's examine some of these reasons for problems more carefully. Not ready to sell. The front appearance. Would you want to see the inside by looking at the front? The roof. Does it need to be replaced? My simple rule is, if it looks like it needs replaced, it needs replaced. Exterior paint. Is it at least 2 colors and does it look fresh and attractive? Are the colors pleasing or gaudy? Interior paint. Is it 2 colors or does it make the house look like a white tornado went through it? Are the colors modern? I always trim my trim in white. My walls are usually a beige or a light gray. Interior trim. Is there 3 color? Are the bathrooms in good shape? Have you used paint correctly throughout the house? Is the kitchen attractive? And does it have granite countertops and an underlaid sink like we use today in houses? I like the L lever handled door handles, 6 panel doors, shower curtains, and mini blinds, and so forth. Carpet. Is it ugly? Is it modern? Is it up to date? Is the color scheme correct for the times? Would you want this carpet installed in your house? Central heat and air. I can tell you right now, if you're in the southern 2/3 of the country and you're trying to sell a house without central heat and air, good luck with that. I live in Florida. I wouldn't dream of renovating a house without having a good central heat and air conditioning system in it. Does the kitchen have plenty of cabinets? Would you like working in this kitchen? Does it look appealing to you? Does it give you a warm and fuzzy feeling when you walk in the front door? Do you say wow or just say, oh, another boring house? Customers won't complain about shoddy repairs. They just won't buy. If it doesn't look good enough to satisfy your wife, your buyers won't like it either. Spend a few more dollars and make it a house you can be proud of, proud to sell, and one you know your buyer will rave to others about. If you do, amazing things will happen. 1. It'll sell quickly. 2. It'll appraise for more. 3. You'll sleep better at night. 4. Your buyers will send you customers. 5. Your good reputation will spread quickly. 6. The neighbors will send you customers or sell their houses to you. 7. Your attitude will improve and you'll enjoy dealing with buyers more because you know you have a great product. 8. You'll save the extra money you spent in holding costs. So in reality, all these benefits are free. Is it in a poor area? Is it in a war zone? If so, you got to learn to stay out of the war zones if you want to rehab houses. That's not where you rehab houses. In low-income areas, it's critical you master the art of financing. You won't survive if all your sales must be to a qualified buyer or sold for 100% cash out. People who want to live in war zones cannot qualify for loans. So if you want to work in war zones, come let me train you where the money's at. Plenty of money in the war zones, but not rehabbing and renovating houses. Here's some good news. You can make some large spreads on these houses because you can buy them dirt cheap. I'm referring to war zone houses. Most of your competition won't touch them. They're easy to find and easy to buy because they're in war zones. At today's interest rates, buyer can qualify for with small incomes, but the problem is finding the buyers who want to live there. Financing is plentiful, so little or nothing down will get people in these houses. And if what you're going to find your biggest and best use of houses in war zone is likely wholesaling them to landlords who want to rent them. The bad news in war zones, vandalism is normal. You'll have to screen out a lot of buyers. You'll be tempted to break the law by falsifying down payments because most of your buyers are broke, but don't do it. You'll have to take back a lot of seconds and a lot of them will default. So what? I guess it's all free money if you want to deal in the war zones. I've sold a lot of houses in the war zones, but I can't tell you I've sold any of them without problems. If you're going to work with a low income or war zone areas, just be sure your exit is clear and you don't get into any traps. Don't rehab in war zones unless you know where to get the buyer financed and you can live with the vandalism. In addition, you must be flexible on terms and not expect to get cashed out 100% of the time. And clearly understand you will be pre-screening one of the most uneducated segments of our society. It will take patience and practice. All right, overpriced. Overpriced is not what you think. And just for the record, all my houses are overpriced, and I'm proud of it, in case anyone asks. You should always set your sales price higher than the amount the house appraised for. If you don't ask for more, I can assure you, you won't get it. But there is a limit. Putting a $125,000 price on a $100,000 house is pushing the envelope. Putting a $300,000 price on a $250,000 house is pushing the envelope. Although, take that same $250,000 house and punch it up to $259,900, and that's acceptable, and you'll probably get it. Your market will tell you quickly. If all the buyers complain about the price, you know you have a problem and you may want to lower it, at least a little. But warning, make sure the price is the problem before you start fixing what ain't broke. Only your buyers can tell you the price is too high, not your spouse, not your neighbor, not your brother-in-law, especially not your realtor. You can always lower the price, but you can't raise it once it leaves your lips. I don't know for sure, but I'd bet I haven't lowered the price on more than 15% of all of the houses I've sold. As a rule, 10% or above the appraised value or good comps is the upper limit. You have to decide the price based on the area, the condition, the sellability of the house, and the heat of the market. Just don't give away money because you're listening to people who are giving you bad advice. Make sure it's the price before you lower the price. You can only find out if it's the price by asking the potential buyers. Next, salesperson's personality problems. Have you ever talked to a seller or a realtor who you didn't like, a mean-spirited, grouchy personality perhaps? How about someone who just won't shut up long enough for you to ask a question? Maybe you've encountered the pre-screener type who treats you like the enemy until you pass his or her qualification test. How about all those times you got a wife on the phone and she was afraid to speak without her husband's permission or vice versa? That doesn't even count the ones who do talk but have nothing to say. Then there's the clueless spouse who can't even tell you the asking price, much less the other details. How about the couple in the middle of a divorce and the wife talks to you as though you're the one who cheated on her? Then there are the know-it-alls who want to do a seminar for you on the phone to impress you with their knowledge about the art of real estate. They can't sell their own house, but can certainly tell you how to do it. Of course, we can't forget all the thinker brains trying to sell to the reptile brains and vice versa. Or the sellers so in love with their house that it takes them 30 minutes to describe every little detail while trying to stay awake. The key for you is not to become like one of these people I just described. If you already are, you can resolve the problem once it's identified. Here's a hot tip. Record your calls and listen to yourself selling a house. If there was a moron on the call, you probably recognize his or her voice. Every time you talk to a buyer, you must sound friendly, flexible, and excited. If you can't, then get someone else to sell houses for you. Same thing goes true when you're buying houses. Tape record your calls with your seller. Play them back. See if you like the way you sound. If you don't, go to work fixing it quickly. You'll get a lot better on the telephone quickly if you record your calls and play them back, and then go to work fixing the things that's broke. Inflexibility of the seller. That means most sellers can see only one way to sell a house, and if that doesn't happen, the house will sit and sit until the perfect buyer comes along. Finding a credit buyer to cash you out isn't the only answer, especially true for low-income houses where A-plus credit buyers are scarce. The more you know about different exits, the easier it will be for you to become flexible. If you don't have your money in a deal and you can live another week without the cash from the sale, you're free to get creative and look at other alternatives. Here's a newsflash for you. It's your job to find a buyer who loves your house, then make it work. That means that sometimes you must be flexible. It's not a perfect world. Bend a little. Here's a short list of selling methods. 1. Sell to a qualified buyer and cash out now. Of course, that's everybody's goal. 2. Lease option to your tenant buyer. Cash out later. 3. Sell with owner financing and then help get the buyer refinanced later. 4. Sell with owner financing and sell off the note at closing for about 90% of its face value. 5. Get the buyer a loan for 80 to 90% and take back a second mortgage for the balance because they can't quite qualify for the full boat. There's always another way. My exit strategy to this date, and has been for so many years I quit counting, simply put a lease option tenant buyer in the house and let them decide when and if they ever want to buy. I can tell you this much, the longer you own a house, the more money you will make. Next, salespersons lack a knowledge about available financing programs. If you're going to master your craft of selling houses, you must learn a lot about financing problems. What will kill the loans? What programs require little or no down payment? What credit can be fixed and what can't? What will the lender want fixed before closing? Who will let you take back a second and who won't? And maybe 40 or 50 other questions you'll get the answers to as you go. You don't have to know all there is to know about financing to sell a house, but the quicker you learn certain basics, the easier it gets. Assuming, of course, you're going to take on the responsibility of doing the selling yourself. Make an appointment with 3 or 4 mortgage brokers and pick their brains. Let them help you with what will work and what won't. Then when you get an interested prospect, it's simply a matter of getting the buyer's information to the lender of your choice and letting the lender tell you what will work. That's the best way I know to learn the ropes about financing. But a lot of veterans won't even take time to do this. I guess they feel they're too good or too smart to ask for help. My friend, what you knew about financing a year ago is not what you should know today. It changes monthly. You must stay on top of it and to be the best. And that will happen automatically if you're selling houses regularly, so don't worry about it. But I'll say it again. This is only assuming that you want to take on the responsibility of selling the house yourself and not get a realtor to take this load off of your back like I do. Next, salesperson's lack of knowledge about attracting and pre-screening leads. The first step to success in buying and selling is locating prospects. Without potential buyers, it's very hard to sell houses. Frankly, an ad in the newspaper should be enough to attract plenty of prospects. Of course, all the advertising today is going to be done online, but it's simply a matter of writing the ad, not how good of an ad writer you are, but getting the ad out so people can see it. I can't turn this into an ad writing course, but any ad that gets prospects to call is a good one. Any ad that doesn't is a bad one, or it's in the wrong publication. Make sure your ad gives the prospect a reason to call. Try to include a unique selling proposition, or USP as they're called. What are you offering that everyone else isn't? For example, lease purchase. That's certainly a USP. No qualifying owner financing or no bank qualifications. That's certainly a USP. Or no credit needed. Our owner will help, or will accept anything on trade. I like that one, because I'll take anything on trade as part of a down payment. No down payment. I would not print that one unless you are looking for buyers who want to, that you want to get cashed out, and you have 100% loans available, such as USDA and VA loans. Some students can use flyers distributed in newspapers, and they don't run ads. Others use a lot of signs, referrals, mail-outs, of course, the internet. And you also can go to USPS.com and have your post office distribute a flyer in any neighborhood you choose for less than 20 cents each. They'll print them and distribute them for you. That's called Every Door Direct. The key is to make sure you keep a good flow of leads coming in until the house is sold. Where most people fail is the way they handle leads once they come in. That, my friend, is by far the weakest link in the chain. Leads must be pre-screened properly, and the good ones work daily. Out of all the batch of leads will usually come some qualified ones. Maybe not with a credit, but qualified if you're flexible. As I discussed earlier, what I look for most are people who love the house and are excited about it. Give me that and a little something to work with, and I'll figure out a way to get them in. No follow-up system in place. Well, the easiest way to sell houses is to work a buyer's list you built from the last house you sold. If you have more buyers than houses, you don't run ads, send flyers, mail letters, or any of that other stuff. You pick up the phone and call the prospects you pre-screened from the last time and tell them about your new house. Today, we have a system called Dreams. It's the CRM system that kind of replaces an employee for you. And we'll keep track of all of this, and your buyer's list is built right into it, along with your websites. You can learn more about that at ronlegrand.com. It's easier to suffer the pain of creating a buyer's list once rather than talking to dozens of prospects from ads every time you get ready to sell. You don't have to be an organizational wizard to do a little follow-up. A pile of pre-screened buyers on the corner of your desk with no separation or filing system is better than nothing. Sounds like my system anyway, but at least I put them in a file folder. Then I misplace the file folder, but I always know it's close somewhere. Next is functional obsolescence. This one is a house problem, not a people problem, and you usually can't fix it, so you shouldn't have bought it in to begin with. That way you won't have trouble selling it. Here's some things that come to mind. Extremely small rooms. Bathrooms off of a kitchen. When you have a bathroom off of a kitchen, it's functional obsolescence. Walk through a bedroom to get to only one bath. That's a no-no. Low ceilings, usually under 7 feet. Easy to spot. House add-ons. I've seen houses where they built wings that look like an airport every time a new family member comes to live in with them. Strange, weird layout that can't be fixed. Houses adjacent to odors, commercial property or school or anything that makes the location undesirable. Bad or no foundation. I've seen houses literally sitting on the ground on top of bricks without a proper foundation. Those are just a few of the things I can think of. Sometimes you can correct them and sometimes you can't. And if you don't see a way, don't buy the house. And if you've already bought it and you made the mistake, get out any way you can, learn your lesson, move on, quit worrying about it, quit crying over spilt milk, go milk another cow. A house is very small. I guess this is also functional obsolescence, but it's very common. Anytime a house has less than 1,000 square feet, I get cautious. I have learned that houses under 1,000 square foot are usually hard to sell, and there's not too much you can do but keep looking for a small family or one or two people. Now, I'm not saying such houses won't sell. I'm just saying that they're harder to sell. I've probably done 200 or 300 houses with less than 1,000 square feet, and frankly, I didn't enjoy getting out of any of them. I think I probably own 3 or 4 of them now. I guess that verifies that there is a buyer for every house. If I can buy such houses cheap enough, I'll do it still today. But I know going in, they're going to take a little longer to sell unless I get lucky. Next, salesperson losing control of the loan process. You must remain in control from the moment you buy the house until you get a check. That includes the loan process. You decide who does the loan, who appraises the house, if you can, who gets the survey, who orders it, who orders the termite report, and who closes it. You're also in charge of speeding up the loan. Yep, not your lender, you. You should check in every few days, push for results, and round up missing paperwork. If you don't know, the close will drag on forever. Would you allow your boss to hold your paycheck for 2 or 3 weeks until she decides to pay you? That's exactly what you're doing when you let a loan processor jerk your chain. So the next time you lose a buyer because a loan processor didn't close quickly enough, go to your bathroom mirror and cuss out the person responsible. The last time I lost a buyer 2 days before closing was because God told them not to buy. Had I been 2 days earlier, maybe I wouldn't have been competing with God. Oh well, 6 weeks later, I sold the house for $3,000 more than the first buyer. Maybe I wasn't competing with God after all. Maybe he was looking over me. House is too far from the city. That's an easy one. Don't buy it, unless you want to create a lot of driving time so you can listen to more of my CDs. Frankly, I don't buy anything I intend to retail that's more than 30 minutes from my office. Of course, I know some big cities, that's about, what, 3 blocks away. But, you know, you get to choose where you work. I strongly suggest you work in an area around it that you can get to within a half an hour or so. House is in a price range too high for the most buyers in that area. There aren't really any price ranges too high, but they might be too high for the area the house is located in. Sometimes the price has no bearing because the upper market is hot. If it is, the higher value is not an excuse for a slow sale. The problem is elsewhere on the list. But in smaller cities where a $500,000 house is a mansion, you can certainly expect selling to take much longer. But that just makes a case for you not to guarantee monthly payments on big loans. Unless you're a sadist and looking for pain, you shouldn't try to outguess the market. Don't count on a high-priced house selling quickly just because you like it. Remove the risk, give yourself time, and you'll discover the big ones sell just like the little ones, but I hope with a lot more profit. And caution, you better make sure you have a large spread on those big babies. Buyers of million-dollar homes are more sophisticated and more apt to ask for a price reduction. The good news is these folks can usually qualify for a loan, and the majority of the sales are all cash. Owner financing and lease purchase just don't have the sizzle they do on the lower end, but that doesn't mean it's not used, because it is, quite often in fact. But you can assume in the higher-priced house, most of the buyers who come to you are qualified and have the money for the down payment. Only one bath. I've sold hundreds of houses with only one bath, but it's not my preference. Cheap houses, not a problem. Houses above 100 grand or so, very difficult. And for houses much above 100 grand, it's almost impossible. People who can pay more want more. If you can't add a bath, you may wish to consider not buying it if you feel it's important to the sale. I have never added a bathroom on a house in my entire life. I've never built a room to add a bathroom. I have added a couple of bathrooms in a house already existing, which shouldn't cost more than $2,000 or $3,000 to do. Trying to sell a 4-bedroom, 1-bath house ain't easy. Selling a 3-bedroom, 1-bath house is okay as long as the house is small. Selling a 2-bedroom, 1-bath house is probably the norm. Buyers expect it. I won't guarantee that every problem you'll run into is on my list, but chances are that if you take a good look at the list the next time you're having trouble selling a house, I'll bet you'll find the problem on it. If you do run into something out of the ordinary that I've not discussed here, drop me a line. In the meantime, remember there are no real problems, just solutions. And very often, when you do run across a problem property, there's hidden profit there for someone who knows the answers and can create a solution. All right, here's a step-by-step process for selling. Here you are with your first deal under contract to buy, either a lease option or owner financing or an option, and only a few days or weeks from cashing in. That's great, but before we start the process of selling junkers to a bargain hunter or lease optioning a house to a family or finding a qualified buyer, we must complete a very important step. Either a title company or attorney must do a title search to verify no liens are on the property other than those disclosed by the seller. The title company or attorney will also verify that the current owner is the only owner, there are no other parties of interest. Until this process is complete, you're not ready to sell or lease the house. Most states allow title companies to close real estate transactions, although some require attorneys to close. A call to a local title company will provide the answer. However, I will always suggest you use a closing attorney, a real estate closing attorney, when you're buying and selling. All right, let's talk about selling ugly houses, wholesaling houses. If the property you're buying is an ugly house that was listed with an agent, the agent will want to handle this for you. Simply ask who he or she intends to call for the title work and say you'd like to handle the title yourself. If no agent is involved, you'll need to call a title company from the phone book or from a referral or from another real estate agent. You'll need the legal description of the property in order to title search, usually. Sometimes they'll do it with just the address. If the house is listed, your real estate agent will provide you anything you need to order a title search. If you're wholesaling a junker, either call or visit the company or attorney to choose another company or whatever you have to do to find a good closing agent. Hold a short conversation with the one you choose about an assignment of contract, if that's your intent, or making sure your closing agent won't be a problem when it comes time to close. This is important to ensure the continuity of your deal. Agree on a price for this service closing before you order a search. The cost should not exceed $100 or thereabouts, depending on where you live. Higher price markets, sometimes $150. I would never pay more than $150 for a title search. Now, this is not a title policy. It is a title search. If you're checking the title on a pretty house you intend the lease option to a tenant buyer, you should make it clear you won't be closing right away. What will be leasing the house. In such case, you won't need a title policy at this time, only a search, and therefore the fee you negotiate will come out of your pocket and be cost of doing business. Sometimes the title company will not charge you anything if they think you're bringing in a customer that they will be issuing a title policy. That is not the case when you're putting a tenant buyer in a house. Don't let the realtor get wind you're doing an assignment of contract if you are. Make certain your title agent doesn't divulge this information either. When you're satisfied the closing agent will perform without becoming an obstacle, you may order a title check and deliver a copy of your purchase agreement and assignment of contract if you're doing a closing on a wholesale deal, if you have the assignment ready yet. In the case of the lease option, your title agent won't need an agreement because you're not closing at this time. Your lease option is already signed by your seller and your closing is done until you install the tenant buyer in the house, and at that point, I want you to use an attorney. If you don't feel comfortable with your conversation with a closing agent, find another one. The whole process should take place within 3 days after you get an agreement to buy, lease, or option the property. Finding the right closing agent will make or break your deals. You need someone that wants to work with you, that's working on your team to help you get the deal done, not someone that's working against you and acting like they are the attorney for the other side. Take time to find a proper closing agent. In fact, the best way is to ask other investors who they use, because they've probably already done the pre-screening work for you. All right, step one is getting ready to sell. Now, once you know the title is clear, the next move is to prepare the house for sale. This won't be difficult because in most cases, you're selling it as is. Condition, at least on ugly houses and most of the time on pretty houses. If it's a pretty house deal, the house should be in good condition, so the only concern is when can it be occupied? If it's not in good condition but it's livable, I still will probably sell it as is on a work for equity deal, which means I'll lease option it to someone else and let them do the work with their money and labor and give them a reduction in price. When wholesaling a house, you won't need to put up a for sale sign, and in fact, you shouldn't put one up in most cases if you don't own the house, especially if it's listed by a realtor. A sign isn't necessary and may attract attention from the seller or agent if placed without permission. If you're using an agent and buying an institutionally owned house, you'll find it difficult to get permission to put the sign up while it's during its escrow. Realtors do not like that. Plus, it becomes a liability issue for them. If the seller is not an institution, it's much easier. You can do pretty much whatever you get permission to do. If the yard needs cleaning or the house is trashed and you don't mind getting it cleaned up, simply ask. You should be able to get a key as well. However, you're not to spend much money to make any alterations to the house you don't own. Remember, you are selling it as is for a wholesale price. Your buyer is getting a good deal because of the condition of the house. The most you'll do is clean up the premises and secure the doors and windows, and usually you won't even do that. If you're doing a lease option deal, then the house is pretty. There shouldn't be anything for you to do to the house except wait until it's vacant and ready to rent. When the house is vacated, are about to be, it's time to start attracting tenant buyers. If you're forced to do some minor cleanup or carpet cleaning, make sure this gets done before showing the house. Again, this should involve a little work at most, not an expenditure of more than a few hundred dollars, a couple of thousand max. Once you have possession, place a lease purchase or for sale sign in the front yard, and place some pointer signs pointing to the house. And you can have it made in any sign shop, or you can find a source for making signs on our website, ronlegrand.com, under resources. All right, step two, attracting buyers. It's now time to run an ad, whether you're wholesaling, leasing, or cashing out. I'll start with the wholesaling process. Run ads all over the internet. In fact, if you'd rather, our virtual assistants will do this for you. It's what they do day in and day out. You don't need to know the websites. Just contact us, find out about getting a virtual assistant of your own, and just assign them with the task of running the ads and updating them on ads like Craigslist and others. It's a whole lot easier than you trying to take on this task yourself. If you're selling a wholesale junker, the ad is simple. Handyman special, cheap, cash, and your phone number. And of course, you'll want to put all over the sites in your area, especially those you get free. And there are some in the resource section in the back if you get the hard copy or download this book at ronsfreebook.com. Don't add anything to the ad. If the advertiser insists you put anything else in it, fight hard not to allow it. Although changing the word handyman to handy person is acceptable if the paper insists or the website insists. Make sure you or someone working with you is available to take and return the calls. No need to run an ad if no one's taking the calls. And don't call them, don't drive them to a voicemail system. If you're going to run an ad, be best to have a live person take the call. We use patlive.com/Ron LeGrand. patlive.com/Ron LeGrand. That's a 24-hour answering service that you can set up to take calls from any source you want to take them from. And don't volunteer information. Answer only what you ask and send the prospects to the house you have advertised. Tell them to get in if they can and just look if they can. When asked what you want for the house, be prepared with your answer and don't sound wishy-washy. If you use my formula for making an offer and are reasonably close to your ARV, repairs, your asking price should be at about Mayo. We should be at least $5,000 to $10,000 more than you agreed to pay. And honestly, I would expect you to make a minimum of $10,000 wholesaling a house. And if you can't, it means you paid too much, or you're selling it too cheap, or both. Be sure to build a buyer's list in the process. It'll become your most important asset as a wholesaler. It'll be automatic if you're working with our Dream system. Keep track of the number of calls and emails you receive. You're not to visit the house with your callers. They'll call you back if they're interested. If they don't, you call them. If a prospect who wants to buy hasn't contacted you within a couple of days after you placing the ad, extend the ad for longer. Continue this process until you get a buyer who wants to meet and give you at least a $500 deposit. If you put a property on the market and it's got enough profit in it for them, you do not need to worry about having people call you to buy it. If you're dealing with a tenant buyer for a pretty house, you want to run an ad in your paper and or at least online. Again, don't forget the newspapers. They still work. In an area that matches the location of the house. Make sure the words lease and purchase are in the ad. And I would put no credit needed and no bank qualifying. Running an ad for 10 days at a time is sufficient, but you should keep it in the on all the local sites you can. In fact, just keep it on the sites until you found your buyer. Remember, you're building your buyer's list simultaneously if you're doing it correctly. Don't put the required deposit or monthly rent requested in the ad. Never name the down payment that you want or the monthly payment that you want. If you name the down payment, you'll never get more than that. When people call, you find out how much they got by asking them what's the most you can put down. Make certain that you can look into all the windows, but in other words, leave the blinds open so people can see in the house. Don't close it up like a tomb. Let the house show itself. In fact, most of my successful students, as well as myself, buy a lockbox from Home Depot or Lowe's and install it on the front door with a key inside it. Instead of meeting the prospects at the house, you give them the lockbox code, let them look on their own. If they like what they see, you'll get a call. If you leave flyers on the counter with all the facts about the house, they know pretty much everything before they even call you. I know this sounds scary at first, but you'll quickly discover the risk of buyers stealing something from a vacant house is far easier to deal with than making numerous trips to show houses to people who frequently don't show up. Remember, the less I do, the more I make. Never tell the callers what you want for deposit. Always ask them what they have to work with. Those with the most cash will rise to the top of your list. Those with little or no money should be quickly discarded, unless, of course, they have good credit and you want to cash out. In which case, they become buyers. You get financed now with numerous no money down or low down payment programs. Step three is pre-screening these buyers. Again, let's start by pre-screening calls on houses you wish to wholesale to bargain hunters. In other words, let's start by selling junkers. You've run a handyman special ad and you're getting calls from prospective buyers. You sent several to the property and now one who shows interest calls you back and says he or she wants the house. Ask your buyer when he or she would like to close. If the answer is ASAP, you have a real prospect. Any other answer is not acceptable unless you're convinced your buyer is real and can perform. If the buyer needs to see the inside and couldn't gain entry on his own or her own, you'll have to make arrangements for getting them in. If there's no agent involved, this can easily be done by leaving a key on the premises. If an agent is involved, ask the agent if you can get a key to show the house or prospective contractors. Most will cooperate. Some won't. If this presents a problem, you may be forced to have an agent meet you at the property with the buyer or tell the buyer you don't have a key and can't get in at this time. Believe me, anybody looking to renovate a house will find a way in. You don't need to worry about that. You'll be surprised to learn that when you leave enough profit on the table for your buyer, the buyer will find a way and gain entry any way they see fit, and many times they'll buy it without even getting entry and if they can see through the windows. Your common sense applied to the circumstances surrounding this deal will guide you to the right choice. Use your own judgment. You never need to meet the buyer. Ask the buyer to send a check made out to you for $1,000 if that's what you want for deposit, and that's the least I'd take. And have the assignment of contract prepared and ready to sign. If you have set a fair sales price, don't come off that price. Just tell your buyer that's the least you can take. Show no flexibility. Once you have a signed contract to sell along with a deposit, you may move to the next step. Now let's go to pre-screening tenant buyers for lease purchase or cash out deals. When prospects who have inspected the house call back to see the inside, pre-screen them before setting an appointment. If they have no money and they have no credit and they can't afford the monthly payment, you don't need to meet them. You don't even need to let them inside. They need something to work with before you even give them the combination to the lockbox. Make an appointment only if you feel good about the chances of the prospects buying. Good credit may or may not be necessary, but if not good credit, a large down payment. And I'll say again, I will not meet the prospect at the house until after they've seen the house. But I do want to know what they have to work with before I even give them access to the house. So most prospects at the house, meet them if you want, but I wouldn't. I'm telling you, you do that a few dozen times and you'll figure out why Ron, the old guy, wants them to see the house without him presence. I've learned a long time ago, I don't need to show them what a toilet looks like. I bet they can tell what a kitchen looked like on their own. They don't need my help. Plus, they just assume I wasn't there. They can walk around and dream and talk about the house. So I don't mess with them until after they've seen the house, and then we set the appointment. If you're looking for a qualified buyer to cash you out now, it's simply a matter of letting your mortgage broker or loan processor guide you on what kind of loan is available for your buyer. If you like what you hear, and you pass it on to your buyer and let your processor take it from there, arranging a meeting to get an application. You bow out and let the processor get a loan completed. In other words, let other people do what they do best and get out of their way and let them do it. So someone's looked at your house, they like it, and they tell you their credit is good, and you feel like they can afford a reasonable monthly payment. And they have enough down payment to at least satisfy FHA's needs, which is 3.5% down plus 4% in closing costs. If so, that's when you make the appointment for their loan processor to meet them. The loan processor will make the call. He will tell them what to bring to the meeting. He will get their application while you're doing other things more important. Let the loan processor do what they're trained to do. However, if it's not a cash out deal and it's a lease purchase prospect, then we will meet with them ourselves coming up before we're through talking about selling houses. Magic words when selling. Now let's look at the selling side and discuss a few choice words I use to find good buyers. When wholesaling, I want to know my buyer will come to close with the money, and it isn't simply trying to jerk my chain. In this case, the magic words are, when do you want to close? If the buyer needs more than 10 days, he or she is a time waster and I'm at risk. If the buyer says ASAP, I know the buyer is serious. So many magic words are available when pre-screening prospective buyers for pretty houses that it's easier to simply use the whole script. All these words are magic. I can't tell you how many hundreds, maybe thousands of buyers I talk to before I develop the words and the order in which I use them. So here we go. By the way, these words are available on a script on my Gold Club site under resources and also in all of my training manuals. Do you want to buy or rent? If the answer is rent and you want to sell, the rest of the conversation is worthless. But before giving up, use one more line. Have you ever tried to buy before? Yes. What stopped you? This lets you know immediately what you're dealing with. Is your credit good, fair, or ugly? Don't ask how's your credit. Some people are ashamed to tell you it's ugly and will simply lie. Give them a multiple choice question so they know you won't be shocked if they come back with ugly. Then I would say, well, what's on it a bank wouldn't like? This breaks the ice and gets a customer to come up with now the big question. How much money can you raise for a down payment? Well, whatever the answer. Can you get any more? Or can you borrow from your relatives? Or do you have any credit cards? Or do you have something you'd like to sell or trade? Or can you repair houses or have other skills that might be of interest to me? Because maybe you can give them credit for, let's say they're a roofer. Maybe you can give them credit toward their down payment for installing a roof on another house. Now let's assume you see someone you can work with and you want that prospect to get excited and realize that you're his or her solution to home ownership. Here are the words that'll give that person or glue that person to you. If you can convince me you want the house and make a commitment to buy, I'll get you financed one way or another, even if I have to be the bank. If I can't get you in a home of your own, no one in this city can. Boy, those are strong words. These words have sold a lot of real estate for me. They really make an impact on your buyer's level of hope. Follow them up with assurance that you are easy to work with and very flexible, and the prospect will be putty in your hands. Next words are, we can do whatever you and I agree. I own the house and I'll do whatever it takes to get it sold to you. Is that fair? Now, of course, that doesn't mean that you have to sell the house to people who can't qualify and have nothing to work with. It just means that you're going to do whatever you can to get them in the house. And that ought to be enough magic to keep you practicing for a while. Of course, these words aren't really magical until you begin to actually use them and then make them work, and then you'll think they are magic. All right, step four, closing the sale. If you're wholesaling a junker, deliver both contracts to your closing agent by scanning them or sending them. Actually, you can send them by a carrier if you would prefer. Much easier to scan them and just email them. If a realtor is involved, you must notify him or her of the time and place, but remember that you should be in control of the process. Simply call the agent, coordinate a time available suitable to your buyer and seller. In today's market, the agent will handle the entire sale, but remember, I would rather the agent not find out that I'm already got a buyer lined up if possible, but if they have to, they have to, because frankly, once they know the cash is coming to the closing table, it is really not that important as long as they know they're going to get paid. So if an agent is involved, all you have to do is arrange a time for the, actually they don't even arrange a time anymore, you just arrange for the attorney to get the paperwork emailed to the seller. The seller signs it, sends it back to the attorney. The seller knows they're not going to get paid until the attorney gets the paperwork back. And during this process, he can also be getting the buyer to do the same thing, sign the documents, get them back to the attorney. Then when the attorney gets all the signed documents back, he will simply take the funds from the buyer, distribute the funds from the seller, and pay the applicable closing cost, and give you a check for the rest. You don't even have to show up any place to do anything except coordinate. So now let's move on to our lease option buyer. If you like your prospect, set an appointment to meet them. Go over the terms of the agreement and meet on all the issues, including the length of the lease, late payment. Mine's always 10% after 5 days. Make sure they know they're responsible for all of the repairs. I warrant their systems for 30 days. After that, it's all on them. If you got pets and you want to get extra deposits, discuss that. And then, of course, discuss the size of the non-refundable option deposit they are giving you and the monthly rent. And while you're together, once you agree upon terms, you can call your attorney and set the appointment for the buyer to sign a lease option agreement in front of the attorney and collect the rest of the money. You do not prepare these documents, but you will give the attorney the answers to fill in the blanks. You will take the lease option agreement off of our Gold Club website, and then you'll know what blanks you need to send the answers to the attorney. You'll find there aren't very many of them. Make sure your tenant buyer knows that they need to bring with them the balance of the deposit, as well as the first month's rent and the attorney's fees. That's right. I make my tenant buyers pay the attorney's fees at my pre-negotiated price of $400. So they bring the first month's rent, the balance of the deposit, and $400 to sign the lease option agreement in front of the attorney. It's important you don't practice law here. There are several reasons why I strongly suggest you let an attorney handle the signing. One, the attorney will prepare the agreement so you don't have to. Two, it's free to you if the buyer is paying for it. Why wouldn't you use a free attorney? Three, your buyer will know the agreements are professionally done and will feel more comfortable with the deal after the excitement wears off. Four, there's less of a chance of a buyer demanding the return of the deposit later when he or she decides to move. This is non-refundable money, and your attorney must make sure that that's clearly stated on the agreements and has that conversation with your buyer. If you ever do get in dispute, there's no better witness than the attorney who closed the lease and explained the rules and prepared the documents. Frankly, your case is almost won before you even arrive if your attorney closes this lease option deal for you. If you close it yourself, your case is almost lost before you arrive. If you want an excellent lease option agreement, whether the house is pretty or you're installing a work for equity tenant, you can go to ronsgoldclub.com, go to the resource section, and you'll find them clearly labeled on there. And there's a special agreement called sweat equity agreement if you're putting people in a house that needs work. I spent $6,000 just getting that agreement prepared. You're welcome. Okay, the only kind of buyer left is one who's applying for a loan and closing a deal before moving in, the old-fashioned way, cash out now. At this point, you already talked to your loan processor and determine if your prospect will get a loan for an amount you can live with. This is after you got an application from them and sent it to your prospect or your loan processor, and of course, after they've seen the house. If it's a go, simply have the processor call the prospect, take the long form application, check in with them from time to time. And when all the documents are in, you go to the closing and pick up the check. Actually, you don't even do that anymore. They actually wire it to your account. So you sign when you're told. Keep an eye on the loan processor while the loan is going on. See if they need help getting any documents that are missing. And wait and do what you're told by the processor along the way. And the next thing you know, you're going to be getting a big fat check on this house that you retailed and found the qualified buyer for. Once you find that buyer, the rest of the work is done by the processor, except anything that might be done in the middle to help them speed up the loan. Here's some tips in a line-by-line format with some additions I didn't mention above. Let's say we're wholesaling a junker. Step one, get a contract to buy. Step two, check the title. Step three, run an ad. Step four, send the callers to the house. Step five, get an assignment of contract and a deposit from the buyer. Step six, send the paperwork to your attorney. That would be the assignment and the agreement. Step seven, wait till the closing takes place and have the attorney wire you a check. Step eight, celebrate and do it again. Take your family out to eat at the finest restaurant in town, and make sure they know why you're treating them. Let's say you're selling to a tenant buyer. Step one, get an agreement signed to buy the house, or a lease option agreement signed to lease the house with an option. Step two, check the title. Step three, if you're going to close on the house and buy it with owner financing or buying it subject to, send the contracts to your attorney and set up the closing. Once you own it, go to step three. Get it ready to sell if the house needs work. Step four, run the ads and place the signs. Step five, send callers to the house. Give them the lockbox code after you've collected some information from them to determine whether they should have it or not, and get their information to follow up after they've seen the house. Step six, if they like the house, get a credit application over the phone, or they can come in person, but mostly it's done over the phone, and find out how much they have to put down and how much they can pay per month and whether you think their credit is good, fair, or ugly. Once that happens, get it to your loan processor if a loan processor is involved. If a loan processor is not involved, then set an appointment to meet you if you like what you hear. Step eight, set a meeting and get the amount and get a deposit, and make sure you have the discussion about the down payment being increased if possible, and also the late payment, and that they are responsible for the repairs. While they're there, you can go to step nine and set an appointment for your attorney to close it. Step 10, send the attorney all of the information they need, which you just collected at the meeting, to fill in the blanks on your lease option agreement, and your attorney, which your attorney already has, or you can send it to them if this is your first deal. Number 11, sit back and let the attorney do their thing. He or she will send you documents to sign electronically before or even after the tenant buyer brings in the money and signs the lease option documents. And then you'll have to decide how you're going to get the key to them. And many times I just give it to the attorney and let them hand it to them. And of course, step 12, remember that family. Go take them out to eat again. Different restaurant, but the highest priced restaurant in town, and make sure they know why. All right, next is selling houses to buyers with new financing. In other words, cash out buyers are going to get qualified. All right, buy the house. Check the title. Renovate the house if you're going to. Now run the ads and place the signs. Or here's where I would just list it with a realtor and let them handle all of these next steps. Send the callers to the house with a lockbox code after you get some information. Get the credit application on the phone or in person. And if you feel like they might qualify, get them over to your loan processor and let him or her take it from there. Now, of course, I know this doesn't cover everything you need to do, and it's a pretty simplified version. And in fact, I could write a book on any one of these processes that I just described. But I do teach them in my four-day event called Quick Start Real Estate School. You can find that at ronlegrand.com or ronsquickstart.com. And, of course, if you're going to buy and sell houses properly, as I said earlier, do not try to do it from just the information that I've given you in this book or any other book for that matter. And most certainly, don't even think about doing it from watching a reality TV show. There is no reality in those reality TV shows. All right, closing. Most people give up just when they're about to achieve success. They quit on the one-yard line. They give up at the last minute of the game, 1 foot from a winning touchdown. Ross Perot.